This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Later on the show today, the past, present, and future of Walnut Hills. Starting us off, the Internet of Things, which is basically the idea of connecting devices to the Internet and each other. Everything from cars to coffee makers are now available with Wi-Fi capability, so you can access and control them from just about everywhere with your smartphone or computer. Some analysts think that by 2020, there could be more than 26 billion connected devices worldwide. There are even efforts underway to create smart cities based on connectivity. And for all of its benefits, there are also risks, and many are concerned about the security of the Internet of Things. And joining us to discuss the Internet of Things, our Supervisor of Technology with St. Elizabeth Healthcare, Phil Horney, and Software Architect and Developer, Dave Hatter. And let us know what you think about the Internet of Things. Give us a call at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Dave, Phil, good to see both of you this afternoon.
Thanks, Mark.
Nice to be here.
So if both of you could help me get a handle on how widespread the Internet of Things is. It seems like a lot of technology today would fall under the umbrella of the Internet of Things.
Well, there are numerous devices now. You've got children's toys. You've got all of these smart home devices. Like you said, cars.
Coffee makers.
Oh, yeah. Coffee makers, garage door openers, smart doorbells. If you can think of it, it's probably got a version that it can be connected to the Internet.
A thermostat in your house?
Thermostat, sure.
Okay, so you can control the temperature in your house.
And I'd take it a step further, like where Phil works. Lots of things are now connected to the Internet that wouldn't have been. Medical devices and so forth, from pacemakers to dialysis pumps and all kinds of things like that, as well as a lot of industrial uses. So, you know, this stuff is showing up everywhere because, frankly, it has the potential to add a lot of value to business as well as individuals.
Mm-hmm. And why don't they call it the Internet of Everything then? That's what I keep wanting to call it. I mean, it sounds like it should be the Internet of Everything.
Some people do call it the Internet of Everything.
I mean, it's moving in that direction, certainly.
So what qualifies, what makes an interconnected device?
Well, I would say anything that can get connected to the Internet, I would lump into the Internet of Things categories. But a lot of it really boils down to then, does it have any kind of intelligent capabilities? It's one thing to get something connected. It's another to be able to do something with it, you know, whether it's a web camera or, as Phil mentioned, children's toys are increasingly connected to the Internet in ways that, you know, are often seem odd to me. I don't know why you'd want that, but hey, whatever. So in my definition would be anything that can connect to the Internet really fits into the Internet of Things, but and then the capabilities vary widely from these devices.
And you mentioned intelligence capabilities. So is this a form of artificial intelligence?
Well, I think if you asked a real purist, in most cases, probably not. But it's certainly headed in that direction. And I think, again, it depends on how you want to define artificial intelligence. You know, what can the device do once it's connected to the Internet? Is it sufficient to say it's intelligent if you can get on your cell phone and change the webcam outside your house? I would say no. But
right. But then these devices are also collecting information, like, for example, your Amazon Home or your Amazon Alexa and Google Home are storing your voice data, which Google says they are feeding into their artificial intelligence software to collect data and help make it smarter. So it's definitely moving in that direction.
Okay. Does the Fitbit that I wear on my wrist every day, does that qualify as part of the Internet of Things?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, I would agree.
You sync it up. It's got all of your personal health information on the Fitbit website. So that definitely qualifies. Mm-hmm.
So you can see a lot of potential benefits from this. Let's talk about some of that. I mean, how do you see this in terms of benefits?
Well, despite the fact that I tend to lean on the more paranoid side of this stuff, I also
you don't trust anything,
I also
right?
have a Fitbit. Remember, Mark, just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not out to get you, brother. But, I mean, there is a lot of benefit. As all this information is collected and you become more quantified, whether it's you or some operation in your business or whatever, obviously you can make smarter decisions. I will admit the Fitbit has definitely helped me get in much better physical health than I used to be in because – I look at the thing and I see, well, I haven't made my 10,000 steps today, and it incentivizes me to get off my butt and move around. So, you know, while there are many people who tell me as paranoid as I am about this stuff, I'm nuts to have a device like this, I love the Fitbit because it really does incentivize me to move.
Well, you know, I'm with you. I've got one as well. But I'm a big cyclist, and so I've got a cyclocomputer and – I would qualify that as Internet of Things. It connects to my cell phone. It logs all of my mileage. It logs my heart rate, how fast I'm pedaling, what gears I'm in, all this data, which is synced back to the web somewhere. And so I'm sure that it's being used in some unknown way.
Mm-hmm. And how do you see the benefits of the Internet of Things?
Well, it's certainly good for me as far as the devices that I have. I like being able to track my health and my fitness. I like being able to use my Amazon Alexa at home to find things like music or get other information that I need on demand, you know, make a grocery list, things like that. Plus, I have it connected to my Nest thermostat at home so I can control it with my voice. So for me, the benefits are pretty positive.
Yeah. And I got the Echo Dot as a gift, and it is an amazing device. And you know, I can get weather on it. I can ask it to play certain types of music. I can get news. I can ask it questions. So it really is a very, very cool device. That kind of thing, how much is that growing, these voice-activated types of artificial intelligence?
They're growing very quickly. I mean, most people that have a cell phone have probably at least experimented with Siri or OK Google. You know, Amazon has sold a ton of these Echo devices. Google's gotten into the space with their Home product. You know, these things are selling quickly. I'm not sure the novelty won't eventually wear off for a lot of folks because there is a certain cool factor. Anyone that's old enough to remember Star Wars 4, when Scotty is trying to talk to the computer and they hand him the mouse and he's like, oh, how quaint. Well, you know, now we're
the Star Trek episode.
Yeah. Now we're really there, yeah. You know,
yes.
Where you can talk to it. And so I think it certainly has a certain novelty factor that I think will wear off for some people. But clearly it does. It has a high level of convenience.
Mm-hmm. Phil, you've got, what, four of these devices?
We've got four. We got them for Christmas. And so my three kids have one and we have one. And so they're scattered about our house. So wherever you are, you can play whatever music you want or hear the weather or add something to your shopping list. It's definitely a nice addition to the house.
I wonder if you've had some of the weird things happen that I've experienced with my Echo Dot. One example is my wife and I will be having a conversation, and we're not directing anything toward Alexa.
Mm-hmm.
We don't say, Alexa, what is this or anything.
Right.
We'll just be talking, and we'll hear out of the corner where we have the Echo Dot, we'll hear this voice. I'm sorry, I didn't understand your question.
Right. And they're still working on the voice recognition algorithms. It might have thought you said Alexa and started picking up what you were saying and said, oh, I can't hear you. There's a lot of things that could go wrong there, too. But I think it was just an honest mistake.
Yeah. Of course, one time we were talking about buying something and how the Clear Blue Sky asks, would you like me to order that
mm-hmm.
for you? And, of course, my wife has gotten very good at this. She yelled, Alexa, stop. So and it ceased at that
it's
point.
It's the safe word.
Yeah, exactly. And it keeps a log. That was the other thing that I find interesting. It keeps a log of everything that you ask it. That's on your Amazon account, so you can go in and look at all the questions you've asked. I ask a lot about weather and
music.
Yeah,
if you go back and look at your log, I mean, I've seen instances where I got frustrated with whatever it was I was asking them and, you know, yelled at it, something along those lines.
You, Phil? Come on. You're always so calm.
But it's a device. I want it to behave.
You know, now again, I'm usually the more paranoid of the team here. And, you know, the stuff that it's tracking is really no different than a Google web search. So, I mean, that kind of thing doesn't really bother me.
Okay.
It's really more the fact that I'm not going to have all these listening devices sitting around my house listening, doing who knows what with that information.
Right. And like what you had forwarded before about your Fourth Amendment rights to privacy, where once you've installed one of these devices in your home, that has pretty much gone out the window because, you know, there's no expectation of privacy, and it's sending your voice information to a third party, which you don't have control over.
And there's already been a real-world case in a murder where the police have tried to get this information from Amazon. So, you know, again, this stuff is all very interesting, and that's not to say that they couldn't get it from your smart TV or your computer. You know, it's well known that the FBI's hacked into people's computers and used their webcams and microphones and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So, again, it's not completely outside of the realm of possibility. This wouldn't happen to you anyway, but you're essentially inviting it into your home when you plug one of these things
right.
in.
Well, it's not recording entire conversations either. At least that's been my experience. And Phil, maybe it only records bits and chunks.
Right. It's just snippets. So it listens for a keyword, which it's listening all the time. So it continuously processes in what they call a pre-recording phase. So it can tell what you said right after it heard that keyword.
Yeah, it's hot word. Alexa or OK Google or whatever, whatever it might be for that particular platform.
It's Amazon. Who makes these? Amazon is making this device. Google makes this device.
Well, Microsoft has Cortana that works through Xbox and some of their devices. As far as I know, they don't have a physical thing like an Amazon Echo yet.
Right.
You know, Apple has Siri. So, you know, there's numerous players in the game right now. But as far as I know, the only people who are building standalone hardware devices right now are Google and Amazon.
So I'm sure there will be more in the future. I mean, you look at these companies and what they're trying to do with them. They want to monetize their business model. So Google, they're collecting your voice information for searches so they can place ads. Amazon, they want you to buy more product from them. But still, the market's pretty small. I mean, you're only looking at 325 million people in the U.S. So I think overseas, the market is a lot bigger.
Yeah. What do you think of that number, Phil, that by 2020 there could be more than 26 billion connected devices worldwide? Do you think we're going to see that much growth?
Oh, I think so. I mean, you've got already a fair number of folks with cell phones throughout the world, and those are considered connected devices. So when you add these small standalone devices, I think we could definitely get there.
Well, and again, don't forget the industrial and commercial uses. Pacemakers, I mean, everything under the sun is increasingly getting connected to the internet. So when you think about that 26 billion, it's not Phil's four Echoes. It's a factory full of smart machinery and so forth that is now connected to the internet that, you know, some punch press 50 years ago wouldn't. There was no data other than whatever someone wrote down on a piece of paper. Now all of this stuff is being collected real time. And, you know, that's one of the places where I see the real value of a lot of this stuff is you're able to get a lot of very detailed, quantifiable information. How much energy is this machine using? What's its peak times? Stuff that either someone would have had to try to track manually before or you just didn't have it.
And I have to backtrack a little bit and say in defense of the Echo Dot and those type systems. Mine, and I'm sure yours does too, Phil, you've got an on-off button for the microphone.
Yes.
If you think about it, you can turn the mic off and it's not listening in anymore. And that's the problem, though. I have to remember as the operator to turn it off.
Yeah, and as Dave would say, is it really off?
Yes, or let me go a step further, because one of the problems with all of this Internet of Things are, frankly, that you have a lot of this stuff being rushed to the market. Security is often an afterthought. You can get on Google right now and probably find 1,000 stories about problems with these kinds of devices, whether they're webcams or whatever. One of the major problems I see is not only people purposely hacking these things, but the fact that most people buy this stuff and they don't realize, I've got to upgrade the software on this occasion, right? It's still got software in it, whether it's an Amazon Echo or whatever.
Right.
If they don't make it like a one-touch upgrade thing, how many people listening to us today do you think have recently updated the firmware in their wireless router? I'd say a very small percentage.
Mm-hmm.
So as more and more of these things get connected to the internet, they become hacking targets. They become security holes because someone buys a kid a toy that connected the internet Barbie. And, you know, that thing is going to get a software update. There is such a thing.
Yes.
You can talk to your Barbie, yes.
Dave has one.
I have two, actually. I have the Ken, too.
We will continue our conversation about the Internet of Things. You can join us, 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney, and joining us to discuss the Internet of Things, our Supervisor of Technology with St. Elizabeth Healthcare, Phil Horney, and Software Architect and Developer Dave Hatter. You can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Phil, this sounds like something that you could probably address. We had a post on Facebook from Jordan, who says that I hope IoT devices in healthcare are under way more security and scrutiny than consumer devices are.
Well, in healthcare, everything is security first. You've got a lot of rules and regulations around healthcare, specifically HIPAA and all of the rules that mandates. So the healthcare industry really spends a lot of time and attention on security and privacy.
And don't a lot of those devices have to have FDA approval?
Yes.
Yeah. So.
Yes.
Hopefully, yeah, there's a lot more happening there than your average webcam or your internet-connected Barbie.
Right. You know. But, you know, there's a lot of potential there, too, because you've got all these devices, these life-saving devices that could really benefit from being able to access a greater network of information. So I was looking at the IBM Watson I don't know if you remember that from the Jeopardy quizzes where it beat out all the competition. But they're now leveraging that technology and artificial intelligence to help answer medical questions. So they're building a database of knowledge. And so if these medical devices could access that, that would be, you know, fantastic. And I think we're definitely moving in that direction.
It's like Dave was saying, that this is a great way to come up with lots of quantifiable information.
Yes.
Yeah, it ends up removing a lot of the intuition out of stuff because you actually have, you know, real data and potentially gigantic volumes of it as more and more devices are collecting this data.
How much, though, does this open us up to more cybersecurity problems and hacking?
Well, I think gigantically. There are any number of known examples of these internet-connected devices, in particular cheaper, lower-end things like webcams and so forth. So it gets on the internet. It's got software and hardware in it. There's a website called Shodan that's specifically designed to find devices connected to the internet. It's not really designed to answer your questions. It goes out and says, you know, find webcam X. So you find these things. You find out it's got some kind of problem, and you install a botnet or something on it and then launch some kind of cyber attack, which happened last year with Dyn, a giant DNS service that provided DNS services. Without getting too technical, it basically is – it does the translation when you type in like WVXU.org to the number that would take you over the internet, knocked out Twitter, Netflix, and a bunch of other services. Yeah. So these things are getting hacked regularly.
Mm-hmm. Botnet, and can you explain what's a botnet?
Botnet, in the most layman terms, basically is like a virus that gets installed on these internet devices that then can be kind of remote controlled and used for some nefarious purpose. In many cases, they'll just start flooding sites with traffic, like they shut down the DNS services at that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a large network of individual devices that serve some malicious purpose.
Yeah, they're kind of they're individual devices, but they're collaborating for some nefarious intent.
Right.
Yeah, I asked Dave the question, but Phil, I want your perspective on it. How much does this open us up to security problems?
Well, there's a huge issue with security because most people at home have no idea how to secure their home environment or their internet connection. You know, you get this router installed by your internet service provider or your phone company, and then you really don't interact with it anymore. So unless you're an IT person, you don't really know how to secure yourself.
And you know, these things have software. Software has bugs. Bugs turn up. They need to be updated. That's one of my major concerns with all of this, as I mentioned earlier in this segment, is you go out and you buy a device, you plug it in, you're just happy that it works most of the time, right? Because you're not an IT person. You don't want to fool with the stuff. You probably leave the default password, which I can go find online and now easily hack your device. But even if you do know what you're doing, even if you have access to a friend like Phil who will come over and help you out, right?
Will you help Dave if I call him once you come over?
Yeah, lose my number.
But you'll just disconnect the whole thing.
Exactly.
And say, forget it,
right? Just unplug it, man. Okay. Anything's connected to the internet is a security risk. But in all seriousness, so you get it set up, you do what you need to do to secure it. Well, over time, bugs show up. The vendor puts out software patches and so forth, just like you would install an update for your Android phone or your Apple phone or your Windows computer. People don't even know they need to do these kind of things. They're just happy that that little device is sitting over in the corner doing its thing. And in actuality, it may be a giant security, you know, a big gaping hole that allows someone into their home network to do who knows what.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk to Mitch in Dayton. Hi, Mitch.
Hello.
Go right ahead.
My question was, what is the role of internet service providers in all of this? Because they're essentially the ones that provide businesses and residential customers access to the internet. So it seems like they could play a role in terms of filtering. They could recognize when a piece of malware is trying to connect to a command and control server, but it seems like they do nothing to prevent widespread hacking.
Yeah, I'd say that's pretty accurate.
Yeah, I would agree.
They're a conduit. So how far does your obligation extend?
Well, it depends on your level of service. I would say for home users, their level is pretty minimal. If you're a business customer, they have, you know, higher-end services that you can hire them out for to do this sort of configuration.
And, you know, I guess I would ask the question, while I think it's certainly within the realm of possibility that they could provide more security, how much more do you want to pay for that? You know, where do you draw the line between I'm paying some reasonable fee to get on the internet versus they're going to install all kinds of hardware, hire people, et cetera, to look for, well, there's some new botnet out there. And your web camera that you just installed last month, Mark, is now part of this thing, and they're going to shut your internet service down. You know, again, it's certainly within the realm of possibility, but that would require a lot of hardware, potentially a lot of software, a lot of people to build those kinds of systems. So I'm not saying it can't be done or shouldn't be done, but I guarantee you that's going to cost you more money as a subscriber to that service.
So, Phil, how do you partake in the Internet of Things and not get burned doing it?
Well, right now, I don't think there's
without going to the extremes that Dave would go to, tearing the whole thing.
Yeah, I don't think there's a good answer to that right now. I think, you know, one of the devices that I had on my Christmas wish list was the Luma wireless network devices for your house. That they have really simplified how it is that you go about setting this up. You go to a web page, you tell it what you want to do and what you don't want to be able to do, set time limits, things like that, and it takes care of the rest for you. And I think more devices will start to have that sort of simplified interface to help you out with getting things configured the way they need to be.
Dave and Phil, thanks for joining me this afternoon.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Supervisor of Technology with St. Elizabeth Healthcare, Phil Horney, and software architect and developer Dave Hatter. Coming up, we'll hear about the people and places that make up one of Cincinnati's oldest neighborhoods, and in Focus on Technology, safeguarding 3D printing rights. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.